हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे वन सेकंड Anytime. Yeah. Anytime.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my
Hare Krishna. Anytime. Anytime. Hare Krishna. So then, Srimad Bhagavatam, then first canto, chapter one, text one. We continue. No, excuse me, text three. We're on 113. Yeah, because now we're on Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on his I think so his commentary. Okay, so he's talking about this the parent. So he's talking about the okay. Okay. This is about Sukadev Goswami, and then, then, okay. Probably easiest to start from the beginning. In the previous verse, 112, the Bhagavatam, the powers of Bhagavatam to capture the Lord in the heart were described. In this verse, the sweetness of Bhagavatam is described. Right. So we see is that here is that capturing the Lord in the heart, because if Krishna is always in your heart, then he is always in thinking of us. So we're always in his. So that's the whole point, is when you catch Krishna in your heart, then you actually have something of value. Anything else you catch won't be as valuable, right? Like that. So the point being is that Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. We're his part and parcel. And then we're trying to reawaken that natural relationship we have with him. It's just we've forgotten by our choice. We somehow or another thought, that, I say the things would be great here, right? And that's one of our problems while we're here, is we keep thinking, no, if I just adjust this, then it'll be perfect, or just adjust that, then it'll be perfect. When it's like, no, you could probably says, gives the term best use of a bad bargain. It means it's not a great bargain like that, no matter, who's trying to sell you what. It's never fully ideal. If you follow Krishna's laws, it means you have the situation that's here, it's governed by Krishna's laws. You follow the laws, that will give you the best results you can get. But best is one, is that even you get perfect, seemingly perfect results, they're temporary anyway. So that's always going to be a problem, right? Because we're looking for something eternal. We're not looking for temporary. We want to be happy eternally. And whatever you get here, it itself lasts a temporary point. We, in this particular body that we're in this lifetime, that's temporary. Everything else around us is temporary. So it doesn't matter how great it is. At some point, it's just too old. I remember once going into, I went into, there was a music teacher that I would go to. Oh, elderly Bengali gentleman. And there was a few shops in Calcutta that were considered, in their day, they were the top shops. They were the ones that were like the pioneers in bringing Calcutta to be the top level in the way of instrument making and the quality of instruments. So all the professionals would get their instruments from Calcutta. So one of the shops, he was known for sitar and maybe sarod, like that, unless that was the next shop over, whatever. So in that, one time I was talking about different things and different kinds of stuff and this and that, and if they made it. So this guy brought out a really old, it may have been at that time, like 50 or more years old. That's something that he didn't make, but his father made, the original one who started the shop. And it was made of Burma teak, right? Not just Indian teak, but Burma teak. Really good, doesn't change the shape, this and that. But it was just kind of a bit the shell and part of it, because it was so old. And so then I mentioned to that music teacher about they had this. Would that be good to take that and have him refurbish it and everything like that and start with that as the base? And he said, well, you can look at it like this. Jack, right? He's a really nice guy. I mean, like really, really nice person, right? But he's 90 years old. So he's nice. He's great. But, he has no teeth. He can't digest anything. He can't move around. He can't do this and that. So yeah, it's Burma teak. It's this, it's that, but it's old. And it says, no, it's not going to work. So then it's like, oh, okay. So you're going to have your idea. Oh, yeah, it'll be fabulous. No, it won't. So that's unfortunately the material world. So the thing with the material world is that you're always dealing with two things at once, right? Like anything. You have the principles of what you're working with, right? And you have the details of what you're working with. So this comes down to it's based on, Krishna. It's a masculine and feminine principle, or Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and his energies, right? He is the existence of everything. That means everything has its laws because it's him. So as he expands as everything, the existence of everything, it has the laws that are in line, are of his nature. Right? It means he's Satchitananda. So that means everything has an existence. It has, what do you call it? What is it? The uniqueness of its activity. And what was the other? It means the utility and action. Yeah, that's it. So existence, uniqueness, action, and use or progena. So you have all these aspects. And those are according to Krishna, not according to us. We can say, no, my dad's, fancy car, is actually for us teenagers when he's out of town on a business trip to get the keys and take it out for a joyride, like that, don't even sit in the seats, right? Sit on the back of the car with your feet on the back seats and yell and scream and drink and drop things in there and make a mess. And that's what it's for, right? Like that, like we can say that, but the problem is that gives reaction. One is that there's these kind of slightly, you could say, a bit guys that are a bit fiddly about the rules when they ride around the cars with these big bright flashing lights on them, red and blue lights, and makes noise and that, and they come around and ask all kinds of stupid questions and that, what are you doing? No, it's obvious, it's like that. Do you know how fast you were going? And, of course we know how fast we were going. That's why we're going, wow, hey, check it out, so there's always reaction. And so nothing ever goes quite the way you want. Why? Because we don't follow the rules. It exists because it's Krishna. Its value is therefore in context of Krishna. And then, we want to use it to please him. So the principle is going to be there. The rules are going to be there. And then the details, the specifics that we're in and the specifics of what we're working with, because everyone is unique and this situation is going to be unique. But the point is the rules that govern your unique position are still the same rules. That's the point. You know, it's just like you take dogs. There's dogs, right? And a guy who knows dogs and can train them and deal, he can deal with any dog. But he can tell you that each of the, whatever it is, 300 or 500 species, each one has a unique mood, this, that, and everything, but they're still all dogs. So in the same way, everything in the material world has its overall governing laws, and at the same time, there's a uniqueness to each situation. So you have to deal with both, right? There's always the anxiety, oh, if there's rules and I don't have my freedom, you know, or if we follow rules and no one can have any freedom, you know, it depends on which side of the fence you're sitting at the time. And, but the point is no, they both happen at once. You're part of a group, but you're an individual. Remember one person was mentioning the point about the, you know, the Vedic religious process is that you're in a temple with hundreds of thousands of people. So you're in a group. But each person individually is interrelating with the deity and offering their prayers individually to the Lord, and he's reciprocating individually. So these two go on at once, and basically only the Vaishnava philosophy can actually deal with this properly. Others, then they overemphasize one or the other, or only one or the other. Or, you know, get it out of balance or put, you know, in one thing, they'll go too much on the oneness to one thing, too much on the difference and this. No, but the both go on at once. Krishna is there, his energies are there, and they're both exist same time. So they both happen at once, but he is the basis. So in other words, the laws Krishna had, that's the basis. Then the detail you deal with. So here, then the whole point is that you have all this. And so then that means human life has a nature that it's for. You know, you can say whatever you want, but it's for this particular purpose. It's not something else. You can try to use it for something else. I mean, that's why we have so many nice, cute animals and birds and wonderful plants and, you know, all these things, because people are using their human life for something other than it's supposed to be made for. But Krishna is so perfect, even though you're a nonsense. I mean, think. Trees, they're people who like to walk around naked. Not that they need to, they're taking a shower and they have to grab their towel or something. No, this is, they like walking around naked. Right? They're trees. Now, if you look at it, there's a lot of trees. Right? That, well, a few less if you count Southern California. But other than that, you know, and I think Australia also lost a few trees a few years back, you know, along with some very cute and cuddly koalas and all that, and how you say. And but the thing is Krishna is taking someone who's so sinful, they're a tree, they can't even move. But they add something so nice to the environment and everything like that. And you know, that the air we breathe because of the trees. Right? We breathe out carbon dioxide, and the trees breathe out oxygen. You know, hey, you know, we got a happening here, you know. So that's the thing, is Krishna makes the best out of it. So matter what is there, Krishna found. He's Saragrahi, takes that. And then they do something wonderful to society. Even though there's such terrible, you know, things like earthworms, they're blind. Right? You know, no arms, no legs, nothing. They can just kind of like that, you know. Like that, a step down from hamsters, you know, because they do the same thing, but they got legs and stuff and eyes, but, you know, and it's like they go through the ground, and because of that, then the earth, you know, has all the air in it, the water can get through, the trees all grow, everything happens. Like that. He takes some as you know, wild as a worm and makes it into something really, really nice. So that's the whole point. And in doing that, they benefit others. Now, what are everyone doing? They're all serving. They're all doing something, you know, in the whole process. And so they're following Krishna's laws. They're serving in the capacity as jivas should be serving. You know, it's just that they're only serving these laws. That's all. They don't know that there's higher. So that's the thing with the human life, is that you can understand that Krishna is everything, and so therefore is there, and then all these laws are governed by him. He's the Lord in the heart, so we want to capture Krishna as the Lord in the heart. That's what we're trying to get to, right? And so then that principle then is what, you know, what we're looking for. And so then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is saying, since that is there, then okay, so how to do that means, you know, because you see the situation, okay, then we have this opportunity, but now how to take advantage of that opportunity, how to apply that opportunity, right? Because it's one thing, is that's another illusion we have in the material world. We think if I just have something, it's perfect. I have the house, it's perfect. No, but then you have to deal with the house as houses have to be taken care of. And you have to do something in the house that will give you that happiness you think houses will give you. Right? Like that. So you have to have all these three. So they all go together. Each a very important aspect of one thing. Krishna is one person. He's one. But there's Sakshi Vananda. Right? There's three. And then there's him. You taste a higher taste, but you're only tasting a higher taste if you're doing something that pleases Krishna. He's pleased, you're pleased, right? If you only please him by following the rules, then he'll reciprocate as those rules, right? And that's it. But if you want to catch him as a person, you have to deal with him as a person, right? So we have to be able to discern between what's primary and the secondary, right? So that's another form of this masculine, feminine, or like this as primary and secondary, is that Krishna developing love for him as primary. So that's sadharma. And secondary is dharma. We use our particular nature in Krishna's service, right? So we have to understand that what we're working with, you know, we're working with the facilities we have and the different things and the actions we do and all that. But those themselves are basically, those are governed by the religion. Right, the car is governed by the laws governing the vehicles. Right, means if you're not moving in it, you're not doing anything. You just get inside, and all the guys hop in and all that, and they're all hey, let's go, and then you just move the wheel and go vroom 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 vroom, yeah, you know, like that. You know how you say book distributors out of Vaikuntha, yeah. You know, like this and that, and that you're not going anywhere, and everybody will go by and go, okay, you know, what's wrong with these guys? And so, whatever. So you have to get all the elements together, right? So the sweetness is then what's going to do it, but that comes from Krishna. So because you do this, so they're telling you how to please Krishna, you taste that sweetness, then you don't have any other issues. You're not looking at the lower levels of religion without Saddharma. You're only looking at religion in how it can express Saddharma, right? Because that's the whole point, is if I want to connect with Krishna, I have to do it in a dynamic, personal way, right? It has to be an active way. And then in that active way means I'm going to engage my conditioning in Krishna's service. My conditioning is governed by the laws that Krishna has. Paramatma governs these laws. My gross body, the subtle body, you know, the gross body with the senses, the mind, the intelligence, you know, the ego. These are governed by Krishna, not us. We may say, no, I'm the Lord of, you know, whatever it is, all I survey, whatever. But no. Krishna's, he's even Lord, you know, I survey, but it's your eyes. It has to be light out. If it's pitch black, you know, what are you surveying? You can't even see the end of your nose, you know. So, you know, it has to be appreciated that it's Krishna's running this whole thing, and it's a matter of us taking part on who we are. We have to realize what we're dealing with. It's not like, okay, here's the material energy. Then there's this Krishna consciousness thing that I can, no. There is only the Krishna consciousness. We just have to be aware that that's what's going on, right? You know, it's just like children are out in the street playing around, and for them, it's a happening game and this and that. cars are going by and honking and all kinds of things are going, they don't notice any of that. It doesn't matter to them like that. In fact, it's kind of getting in the way. So the point is that no, it's about our relationship with Krishna. And so that's what then gives that taste. That's what's theirs. You can see that all this is connected to Krishna because it's part of his kingdom. It's his energies. He is the Lord of these energies, not us. We can take part like that. And the goal is connect. If you see it in connection with him for his pleasure, that's how we get pleasure, right? Because we think, no, I can get pleasure separately. We've been trying that since time immemorial, and that's why we've come to Krishna consciousness, because we've doubted. So what's going on here? I've been trying. I'm trying so hard to be happy. It's not working. You know, it's just like they probably mentioned Ravi Shankar, 1,000 lifetimes playing sitar, and he's good, right? So how many lifetimes did it take for you to go, something's wrong here? I'm trying very hard to enjoy and control and, you know, be my best self, you know, and it's not working. Why? You know, so that's going to take a long time, because you can mention to people and they go, wow, yeah, interesting point. And, oh, hey, you know, anybody out for donuts? You know, like, and it's gone, right? You know, it's just that moment, it's gone. So this whole thing that these three verses together, this being the introduction, this establishes these three points. And then with these three, then if you go through the Bhagavatam, then you'll actually see it in the right way. It's all Krishna. It's all controlled by Krishna. But Krishna, the person, is separate from all this, right? Because it's all his energy. He controls it, but he's still as separate as the person, because there's him and his energy, right? That's the important thing. Just like you have your house, you have all the things in your house, you have all what you can do in the house, but you are beyond that. So it's up to what you want to do, and then it has meaning. And if you can't do what you want to do, then what's the point? So the point is, in the material world, people are using it for their own things. Still, he's still the Lord of it, but he's, you know, beyond that as a person. He's not interested. As we saw before, is that Mahavishnu, then he, in the Brahma Samhita, then he glances at the material energy that's carried by, the glance is carried by Sadashiva. You know, the living entities, time, you know, all that's carried. But then he closes his eyes and goes into yoga nidra. So he's just interacting with his internal potency. And that's all that's important. So he and his internal potency, then the pastimes of yoga nidra. Like that. While, you know, while we're sitting here and, you know, and it's all so important, we're doing so many important things and all that. And it can be important if we connect it to Krishna. Otherwise, it'll have a temporary importance that at some point will not be important anymore. You know, so many things are very important. You know, it's just like, you know, saying all those people, their house, you know, the whole neighborhood's on fire. You know, it means, you know, your house, your this, everything's important. But then when it comes down to, you know, you got 5 minutes to get out of here, you start to, you know, yeah, you start to think what's actually important. And just that much you catch. And then you're gone, you know. So yeah. In this, okay, Nigama refers to the Veda. The Veda is a desire tree because it naturally gives fruit in the form of various purusharthas, human goals, artha, dharma, kama, and moksha, which are desired by those who resort to it, right? So those who want dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, they can get it from this tree of the Veda. And they get it better than anyone else because it's scientific. It means anybody on the planet who's getting anything is because they're doing something according to Krishna's law. You know, either they know about it or they don't know about it. It's direct or indirect, but whatever it is, anything of any benefit coming is by following Krishna's law. Anything that's coming that's not, you know, ideal is because not following Krishna's laws. Right? You know, that's the way it works. So it's not that, well, there's what's going on in the real world and then there's Krishna consciousness. No. The real world is Krishna's world and it's his law. So when people say, well, they're not wrong when they say the real world, meaning, you know, it's practical. It's not, how you say, just ethereal and you're spacing out and all that. You have to get real. But the point is you have to get real means there's laws governing it and you have to follow those. People don't necessarily understand that. They think there's this and then there's Krishna consciousness. No. There's Krishna consciousness and then there's illusion. So when you're getting real means it's actually you're coming more in touch with Krishna's rules. And you can do that in Dharma Artha Kama Moksha. You don't have to be a devotee to do that. But you're only touching the rules themselves, like how money works or how a house works or how washing your car works. You know, I can't take the water and spray it on the tree and my car is going to be clean. I got to spray it on the car, you know, like that. So, you know, because I'm thinking, well, if I spray it on the tree is living like that nicely. And then because it's blooming there and because it's nice there, then the clouds that come by, then they see the tree there and then they rain because the trees are there and my car is next to the tree. And that way my car will get washed, right? It's like, yeah, okay. But what happens when it rains and you happen to be downtown? Yeah. So whatever. Or what if it's, you know, your one tree is not enough? Like that. So, yeah. Yeah, because I saw one devotee was telling me, he says, no, says the thing is that it's hot, you know, the ground's hot. And he said he had a courtyard, you know, the cow dung and that. And there was a cloud coming by. And you can see it's not raining. It's a normal day and stuff like that, and it's not raining. And then he said, watch. And he took a pot of water. And took some and sprinkled it on the ground just as the cloud came. And just as the cloud came, for a moment it rained. Because it was only that much water, it only rained that much. And it was like, okay. You know, that's far out. So, yeah. So then, you have all these far out rules and laws and how everything functions. Yeah. So then it was then the point is you follow the rule, you know, so like let's say you have the standard thing, let's say you're going to meet someone senior to you and you know, for some reason or another, let's say it's going for a job or speaking to someone of some official position. Speaking nicely, respectfully, and all that gets results. Not doing that gets you in trouble. Why? Because human beings are supposed to respect those who are senior. You know, whatever it is, whether it's by knowledge, by influence, by money, by age, by skill, you know, whatever it is, by relationship, you're supposed to respect them. And you do that, you get good results. And you don't, you're free to not, but then you're free to get the bad result from not following. So even though they don't know, they just, oh, you have to be respectful. They don't know why. They don't know because God made it that way, but they just kind of have a thing because in religion, there's God, you respect him. And then there's the seniors, you know, it kind of filters down. And so that's the point is that is that this Dharma Dakama Moksha, you follow any of the laws connected with it, you will get the benefit. You don't follow, you won't. Right? Now, if you say, well, I'm following, but I'm not getting the result, that's because what you're doing will give you the result in the future, but you're not getting anything now because you don't deserve anything because in the past you didn't deal with it properly. So you have to keep doing, you know, it'd be just like, let's say, you have like your swimming pool, okay, and you didn't take care of it, all the water's gone. So then you decide, hey, why is it hot day? Let's go for a swim. So you turn on the hose and start put it in the pool, you know, and you come back after 15 minutes and, you make you wash your feet in the bottom of the pool, like that. And you think, what's going on? Why not? You know, because you haven't been taking care of it. You know, well, if you've been regularly filling it and all that, taking care, then now you just turn on a hose and go in and you can swim. So the whole point is that it's, you do the right action, you always get the right result. You're doing the wrong action, you always get a wrong result. And if you think, why am I getting this mixed or something? It's because you haven't done the one before getting the other. It will come in the future. You know, you invest now, you can't go to the bank. Okay, I put down, you know, okay, here, there's $1,000 and everything like that. Walk out, you know, go do some work around town or something like that, you know, and then come back to the bank and go, okay, how much interest do I got? You know, I want to pull out 10,000 bucks and all that, and says, no, you come back after 10 years or, you know, 20 years, maybe you'll have like that, but not right now, no. You know, it's like that. No, but I put the money there. Yeah, it will come. And, you know, so that's why Prabhupada says what you're getting this life is coming from last. What you get next life is what you're doing now. And so then we can say is why I should wait and all that, you know, like this and that, and, you know, or wait around for that. It says, yes, that's intelligent. Do devotional service. Then whatever, you know, will be happening now is happening now. And you go back to Godhead. You don't have to wait around to, you know, get your result of becoming a Gandharva or something like that. You know, it's a waste of time, because then, you know, from there you come back here. It's not that they don't have problems, right? It means if Vichitravirya, I know it's Vichitravirya. Yeah, I think it's, no, not Vichitravirya. Who was the other one? Vichitravirya's brother.
Chitrangada.
Chitrangada, yes. So Chitrangada, He's you know, Kshatriya, and he's got a name, Prince, and that. And then a Gandharva comes along and then finds out he's got the same name. And in his mind is, you know, no human's going to have my name. So they have a battle. I think they fought for 3 years, and then finally Gandharva killed the human and all that. So now they're going to do that here. You don't think that they're not doing that up there? You know, it's just you have a bunch of bozos that, you know, a bunch of losers, and they harass each other, you know, just because they have a great looking body and fabulous clothes and all this kind of stuff. You don't think they're not harassing each other? You know, they may not be as gross, it may be more subtle, but it doesn't mean they don't harass. How much trouble does Indra get himself into? And he's the king of them. Right? His piety is more than all the other demigods that are interested in karma, right? So in other words, all the karma Mr. Bhaktas are from Indra on down, right? And then those who are jnana, they're above that. They're the, you know, Maharjana Tapa Satya, you know, or Satya specifically, the yogis, or the Hiranyagarbhis, you know, the ones that meditate on how, you know, the universal form, you know, everything works and everything like that. So the envy is there everywhere. It's not that it's just, you know, only here. No, wherever you go like that. So therefore, these human goals, dharma, artha, karma, moksha, they're available if you follow the Vedic rules, you know, either you know it, you've learned it, you've studied it, you've practiced, you do, you know, by following the Vedic culture, or by, you know, your next life where you were following nicely here, but not quite enough to, you were following enough nice to maintain human life, but not enough to maintain human life in India. So then you're born in the West. That's why so many of the things they do are actually close to or a little bit something based, you know, on the Vedic thing. And the ones that are successful, and then it works. And then where they're not successful is where it doesn't work, you know? And so, yeah. So that's desired by those who resort to it. So those who take advantage of it, that's what they can get. So dharma, artha, karma, moksha is the maximum you can get, you know, if you're trying for it, you know? You follow the rules, it works better. You just haphazardly follow. Sometimes you get, sometimes you don't. You know, don't worry, you'll be back. You know, so you become, you know, the dog, the cat, the, you know, the whatever it is, the chimpanzee, this and that. And eventually you get back to where you were, you know, like that, and just keep going around. But then here, however, because of its nature as a tree being magnanimous, fulfilling everyone's desire, the Vedas, it also gives the fruit known as the Bhagavatam, since some people desire that. Right, so those who desire that, it gives the Bhagavatam. It gives what you're asking for. So if they're asking for dharma, artha, karma, moksha, That's what it gives the Vedas. You want bhakti, it gives you Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? That's the point. Bhagavatam also means that which belongs to Bhagavan as the proprietor. This implies that he alone gives the scripture to his devotees, and thus persons other than them do not have rights to it. Right? So Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami then explains that Krishna is sitting in the heart, and he's waiting for that moment when you want to know why. What's going on here? You know, why, you know, you want some answers to, you know, things bigger than just what's going on in your daily life. Why am I suffering? Why is this? Why all like that? And so then at that time, Krishna arranges that you contact the devotees, right? So he's arranging and says, oh, I'm going to do it myself, but you don't know about it, right? So then he arranges. And that's why, because you see, is every devotee, when they come in contact with the movement, it's always something unique. You know, as I mentioned before, devotees have told me that they lived in the same place where the temple was, same city, and, you know, move, and never saw the devotees, knew nothing about it. They went to a different continent and whatever it was, and that environment, then they had that desire, and Krishna put them in contact with the devotees there. You know, so wherever it is, you didn't mean, you're just walking down the street and then suddenly here, you know, you bump into the devotees or this or that or, you know, whatever happens. So he gives, like no one else has the rights to it because they'll just make a mess with it, right? That's why you see Shankaracharya told his fathers that not, you know, not to bother with the Bhagavatam. He didn't make a commentary. He didn't deal with it. So his followers should follow suit. Of course, some of them are so foolish, they think, oh yes, no, I can do it. I'm so, because I'm God, so I can do whatever I like. But no, it's they just ruin. Means, in other words, they just speak their nonsense, then, you know, that's bad. But they speak nonsense using Bhagavatam, that's going to make it worse, right? Galitam means that it falls down of its own accord when ripened on the tree, not by force. So you can't force it. You can't say, as I'm intelligent, I'm going to understand this. No, you can use your intelligence to apply that you have intelligence, you can study. So you could spend time on a regular basis for a good amount of time going through, but you have to contemplate and you have to be submissive to Krishna, pray to Krishna, because it's by his grace that you understand. So manana means contemplating means you're first going to be, you're removing doubts like that. But once that's there, then you have to contemplate what's going on nicely. Because if there's doubts, then because you only got rid of the doubts, so you have those misgivings, right? You have to uproot those. Those are the, you know, the real anartas. The doubts are the more superficial ones, or they're the symptomatic of the more deep things, right? Thus, it is completely full of sweetness. So it also means, since it falls on its own, it's the most sweet. It's not, you know, partly ripe or this or that. No, it's fully sweet. So you can only get it when Krishna gives you, and when it comes, it's fully ripe. So the Bhagavatam, wherever, that means even the newest person, they come in contact, it's the fully ripe Bhagavatam. How much they can taste is another thing. You know, like Prabhupada gives the example of someone jaundice. You give them rock candy, which is the most purified form, but when you taste it, it'll taste bitter. But as you keep eating it, then the disease starts to go, and you start to appreciate the sweetness, and then it comes to its, with time, to its full sweetness. So when you're contacting Bhagavatam, it's not that I make the Bhagavatam. So, because I'm so advanced, therefore I'm dealing with an advanced form, but you're new, so you're just dealing new form. Same with the name. The name is Krishna, right? Otherwise, if the name's not Krishna, we make the name that, you know, because I'm pure, therefore it's the pure name. And when I'm not pure, then it's not the holy name. No, then if it's not, then why would there be offense? There's offense because it's Krishna. And because we're not paying attention, the effect we're getting is Nama Bas or Nama Aparad. But the name is the name. So the point is it's Krishna makes the sweetness, not that we make the sweetness. You know, I'll tell the story and, you know, make everybody in ecstasy and everything. And I don't know if you've ever had that kind of experience in some field of service to Krishna, that you think, yeah, no, we're really going to do it good, and the devotees are going to be really impressed, and this and that. And then you do, and it may not come out. You can't get anything done the way you want. That's one of the ways. Or it works out the way you want, and nobody cares. Not that they're that. It's just like they didn't notice. You know, it's just they're going on and that, and you're thinking, oh, well, did anyone like, did anyone this and that? And I was, oh, yeah, no, it's okay. And then, you know, it just goes on. It's not Krishna just is letting you know. It's no. It's Krishna makes it. We can be an instrument. You know, it's just like the spoon is saying, okay, today I'm going to cook a fabulous lunch. No, you're going to assist the person who is cooking, but you're not going to cook, but you're involved there, so that Krishna arranges that the devotee gets the credit. But the point is Krishna already told Arjuna, no, I've already killed everybody on the battlefield. Like that. That's done. In fact, in universal form, he's showing it. You can see it's going on. But it will happen whether you take part or not. But if you take part, then naturally, then you get the credit, because it's about the pastime. It's about the interaction, that you're trying to do something for Krishna and his reciprocation of that. That's what's going on. So then Krishna appreciates that, and it works very, very nicely. Okay. Even after falling from a high position in the tree, it does not break, nor does it lose its sweetness. Okay, yes, Raghunathji.
Krishna Maharaj, I want to only ask you, I was thinking, when we have the knowledge that Krishna is doing everything and we can only take part, sometimes it can be happen that we start to lose the inspiration, because anyway, Krishna is already done, you know. It sometimes is much more, I don't know, for me, positive that, okay, I can go to do something for Krishna, even don't know that already Krishna is dead, you know, then
Yes. No, your point is good. But the thing is we always have to see is that you get inspired knowing that you can do it. But then once you start doing it and it's going well, now what do you think? Are you thinking Krishna did it or you did it? You have to understand both. We take part as an instrument, because it's Krishna's potency. It doesn't mean Krishna personally is doing it. His energies are doing it, because this Paramatma controls the energies and they work. You want to do something, he has to make it work. Like, I want to pick this thing up. But how big is this? If you take 1/10,000th the tip of the hair, this thing is probably millions of times bigger than me. Right? So it's by Krishna's potency. But I want to do it. I want to be involved in that. Krishna gives the potency I'm able to do. So the point is it's not that Krishna did and I can't do anything, because then we have the problem is we're thinking I'm the doer. So in the beginning, because we don't understand this so well, then it works fine. And that's, you know, we do things and we may think I'm doing this and all that, but we're giving the result to Krishna. That's the difference between renunciation and sannyas in the 18.1, is that renunciation thinks I'm doing this, it's mine, I get the results, but I give it to Krishna because I'm a devotee. I want to please Krishna. And that. And then with time, you think this is Krishna's work. I'm doing this on behalf of Krishna. And, you know, and then I'm taking part like this. So, yes, it's like you as an individual are doing something. But the point is we always, to avoid pride, we have to understand that it's not, that we're not the ones controlling the energies. We're not causing the transformation. You know, you put the potato in the pot, you have some little bit of oil, the heat's on properly, the potato's going brown on the one side. We're not making it go brown. Krishna's energies are making it go brown, right? And it's only the potato you can get it to go brown. You know, you put a squash in there and it goes brown, then it definitely doesn't work out so good. But a potato, it goes nicely brown, because it's the law governs the potato and allows it to caramelize. Then you're taking part by putting the potato in the fire with the oil in the pan, you know, at the right heat and moving it at the right time, leaving it long enough. You always stir it, it won't go. And if you leave it too long, you know, so you're taking part. So that's the point, is your taking part is what pleases Krishna. Because you're thinking, no, I have to do something to please Krishna, but taking part pleases Krishna. That's the whole point, because then he can interact. No, you're cooking for him as a person, so you're cooking for the deities. And so they interact there, but also because you're doing it to please Krishna, you're cooking. So Krishna, as the cooking process, is reciprocating, so it's working out nicely. You know, like that. And so all that together then is seen. And then so it's just a matter of, like we were saying before, there's the principle and the detail. You know, so if you find the principle is not, it's right, then look at the detail of it. You know, if the detail doesn't make sense, look at the principle. They both go together. Does that make sense? So you have both of those. Always remember, never forget. So then in dealing, then you're going to have the two, like the two aspects of just trying to not forget, but by remembering, you don't forget. You know, so some of what, I won't forget Krishna, and that'll inspire them to remember Krishna. Oh, remembering Krishna, that inspires them to remember Krishna. So okay, either way will work.
That means we can meditate like, okay, I can be nicely part of the service of the Krishna.
Yes, yes, yes. Because that's the point, is why would that service be happening unless you're doing it? You know, in other words, you engage yourself in service to Krishna. That means you yourself are engaged in an activity. And for Krishna, he's reciprocating with each and every living entity, right? All the unlimited living entities, he's Paramatma in every one of their hearts. So that means your service to Krishna is a dynamic thing. That's something you yourself are doing in relation to him, and he's reciprocating that. It's not that, oh, I'm so small, he won't notice me, there's so many other living entities. No, he's come, he's sitting in your heart, not someone else, you know, no one else is going to be sitting there. Right? Like that. So that's the point, is that it's that personal aspect that you're doing this to please Krishna, but by Krishna's grace, you're able to do it. You know, that's why we will pray, okay, I'm going to cook for Krishna, that I may cook nicely, I may please you by this, and things like that. And then that mood, you have that mood, and that he reciprocates with the mood. So then, like that, and then we experience that interaction with Krishna, because it's real. But the point is, you have to discern, it's not sentimental, it's real. You know, but if you get too much, oh yeah, you know, this, that, no, that's not, because then that's about you. It's about Krishna. Okay, I got to cook this and cook this nice. I have to pay attention. And so then you're doing it for Krishna. You're cooking, thinking of Krishna, and then Krishna reciprocates.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because always on that, you just have to remember, if one you see is, oh, I'm not aspiring, I'm going that direction, then the other one is just, yeah, it's like we said, never forget, always remember. I was pointing out the never forget side, because we tend to think I'm the controller and the enjoyer and the doer and all that. So I was pointing out, no, it's working because of this. Because it's basically because people may think that I can do it. I'm a devotee, so we're beyond the rules, so I don't have to follow the rules. But point is, yeah, you don't have to follow necessarily the karmi's rules that don't apply to you, you know, legally, like that. You know, it's like they can't tell you, no, you have to sit in your house and eat a box of Cheerios or something like that. No, it's just that. But that doesn't mean you're not following Krishna's rules and the rules given by the acharyas. So sometimes it's that mistake's made. Oh, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't have to follow any of the rules. Okay, but then are you just sitting under a tree and chanting and that's all you're doing? No, they're doing so many things. How do you decide what rules govern or regulate what you're doing? And they'll think, oh, it's just, you know, whatever is practical. But who's defined practical? Who says that, you know, who made the rule that if you want the car to work, you have, you know, and you to get somewhere, you won't have to be in the car, you know, two, there's got to be petrol, the thing's got to be tuned and working, you have to have the key to whatever turns it on and all that, and you have to know how to drive. You know, who said all that? That's Krishna. You know, so the point, the two go together. So the one says, you know, it's just like, let's say you have Baladev and Vishwanath. So Baladev's pointing out that anything, pure devotional service or anything in pursuance of pure devotional service, you know, is devotional service, right? You know, in other words, the person just comes in contact with Krishna consciousness, and coming in contact, he's heard about pure devotional service, and he's by his intellect, he thinks, yes, I want to do this. But he himself doesn't necessarily have that proper understanding or the mood and all that. So he's making his attempt. And where he is attempting, it's working. Like the person first comes to the temple, he takes prasad, he chants. So then he may leave, you know, the temple, you know, to come, he'll come back the next day, but then he's chanting, you know, and he thinks about the prasad. So he found out how to offer or what you can offer or whatever, or, you know, just everything's offered to God. So when he gets his, whatever he gets to eat, you know, he thinks, you know, God, please accept this or whatever it is. And then, you know, he's getting some, that's all he's doing. Everything else he may be doing complete nonsense, but he's only considering these two things, his chanting and the element of prasad in connection with Krishna. He doesn't have the knowledge of anything else, but those aspects are actually bringing him to pure devotional service. He's getting the effect, but only that much. That's why he's called a neophyte, right? And as he goes, then he gets more and more effect because it becomes more and more of his life, like that. So Baladev's pointing out that aspect. And Vishwanath is pointing out, yes, and you can say actual devotional service starts at prema. Before that, you're actually in the process of practice, right? Sadhana bhakti, sadhana's there, but bhava is also a sadhana. Like you see the Brajbasis are there in the pastimes. There are the eternal associates, but all the others are assisting the eternal associates, doing what they're doing until they come to the point of having the same love that they have for Krishna. Then they're able to enter the apricot lila, right? So that means is that that's where it is, because what happens is then you do a little bit and then you think, yeah, I'm a big devotee, I'm this and that, and then Vishwanath, no, there's big devotee. Oh, okay. You know, and then you go back to Baladev and get inspired and try to do, and then when you get big again and that Vishwanath said it, oh yeah. Okay. Then, you know, like this. So between the two, you get yourself going, you know. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is you have this both these aspects are there and they're both important, but you have to know when. It's like the thunderbolt and rose. So there's time to use the thunderbolt when the false ego or other thing's too big, and when the false ego is small, then you use the rose. Because in other words, when you are humble, then you can use the inspiring aspect. But if you're proud, then you have to, the thunderbolt aspect has to be used. Does that make sense? So they both go.
Yes, Maharaj. Yes.
Is that you? Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. So then, yeah. Okay. Then. Okay. Even after falling from a high position in the tree, it does not break, nor does it lose its sweetness. That is because it comes down from the highest position, from Narayana, to the branch of Brahma, then to the lower branch of Narada, then to Vyas, and finally to the mouth of Shuka. Thus, without being damaged, it is endowed with liquid sweetness like honey. The parrot, Suka, has even made an opening in the fruit with his beak to bring out the sweetness. Moreover, having been tasted by him, that fruit becomes even sweeter. Moreover, it remains unbroken. Right? Like that. Coming down step by step from the branch of Sutta and others, what is implied here is that without the Guru Parampara, one cannot drink Bhagavatam in its unbroken form, just by trying to taste it through use of one's limited intelligence. Right? So that's why we see is Prabhupada's point and the Acharya's point is as it is. Right? Because Krishna Prabhupada's taking that term as it is. I don't remember what was the original Sanskrit point, but their point is being made. No, it's that there is the actual absolute truth, like that. And then, because the Vedic literature has it, and Vyasadeva, even though he is Vyasadeva, he didn't fully understand it. He was able to, you know, the goal, human goals of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, make that, you know, very clear and all that, and show that there is a devotion and this bhakti and like this, and that's the highest thing. But the way he presented it is people are just going to go for the Dharma, Artha, Kama. Even they're going for the bhakti, it's to get the Dharma, Artha, Kama. But then after talking to Narada, then he sees, no, this is that... But, you know, I was looking at it from a particular angle, but the philosophy is the Chinta Veda Veda Tattva. And in that position, then he's able to understand and appreciate. Then he's able to write Bhagavatam. So that's the point, is no one's going to be smarter than Vyasadeva. There's not going to be anyone today. It doesn't matter what their IQ is. They're not going to be smarter than him. And so it's only by the parampara that he understood it. So it's not by use of one's limited intelligence. Because, hey, no, but I'm more intelligent. Yeah, you're more intelligent than here, but how are you compared to the heavenly planets? Right? And then how are they compared to the, you know, the Prajapatis? And then how are they compared to, you know, Lord Brahma? And so it's, you can't compare, you know, like that. Yeah, you're more smart than anyone around here, yes. But that's still, but Krishna's beyond your mundane smartness. That. So it has to be appreciated that, yes, it coming down through the parampara, that's where you can get the unbroken taste. Through our intelligence, through the mind and our sense, that's not how it's through. The taste is going to come from the devotion. Then the senses are connected to Krishna, the mind's connected, the intelligence, the identity is connected, right? That, therefore, that's going to connect the body. And so then we're able to engage, and then we're able to taste. And that's it, because we're following what comes in parampara. But if we don't follow what's in parampara, we make up our own system, then hey, you're at the back of the line. You know, bogus Indian gurus have been, you know, and upper sampradayas have been doing the, you know, we're going to work it out by our intelligence or our feelings or my identity, I'm God or this or that, or, you know, through the senses or that, since time immemorial. Like that. So, you know, you want to be the, you know, next in line, get in line behind the other, you know, however it is, you know, millions of them. So, no, even that, you're not that great, you know. How should the fruit be consumed? That is explained. One should drink it, for this fruit is the essence of taste, rasam, devoid of skin, seed, and other objectionable parts. Laya means liberation, sayuja, or attaining the conditions of salokya, sharshti, samipya, and swarupya. Right? The word alayam means that the fruit extends beyond the types of liberation. These types of so it's rasa alayam, right? It means the rasa goes beyond the liberation, right? Right. So. Rasam, right? And laya means liberation, right? So it can either mean the sayuja or the also the Vaishnava forms. But then it's alayam, not layam. It's not these liberations. It's beyond that. The rasa is beyond liberation, right? We're thinking, okay, you get some taste here, or I get out of here and I'm free from this, I get a taste, you know, or even the taste of I'm on the same planet as the Lord. I'm an associate of the Lord. I have the same, you know, a compatible form with the Lord, or I have a same opulence like the Lord. It means, no, this taste is beyond that. You know, sayuja definitely, but even these others, that's the point of the Bhagavatam, is it goes beyond. That takes you to Golok, and then Golok takes you to Braj, like that. Because Bhagavatam is famous for glorifying the Lord's pastimes. Or laya can refer to the eighth sattvika bhava called pralaya, fainting. Right? So the rasa malayam will take you to that, you know, very, you know, full, how you say, you know, taste of bhava, right? One should drink until one develops the eight symptoms up to the final one, fainting, right? So you're drinking, if you're only getting, you know, a few hairs standing on the end, okay, keep drinking. And I keep going until you're just completely devastated because it's, you're so overwhelmed with the absorption in Krishna, attachment to Krishna, that taste. Though one will not be able to drink the nectar when one has fainted, when the fainting wears off, one again awakens to consciousness, begins drinking until one faints again. Right? One cannot give up drinking. Thus the word muhur, continuously, is used, right? So that you continuously drink this rasamalayam, right? Or muhur can have another meaning. Though one has drunk it, by again drinking it, one develops more relish for it, right? So means that continuous, it's not even just that it's just going on continuously, but each time you drink, it gives more than what it did before. So even you've drunk it up to the end where you faint due to the transcendental ecstasy, when you wake up, when you taste it again, it'll be greater than the last time, right? This is surprising. Aho. O knowers of rasa, rasikaha. This refers only to the devotees, for they develop rati, or bhava, right? That attachment to the Lord, that which becomes the stai bhava, right? So this just keeps going, then that becomes the stai bhava. So that taste in which is, then that becomes the main bhava, and then from that all these others come and everything like that. In that position, they can taste the rasa of Bhagavatam. Jnana yogis and karma yogis cannot claim this position. O auspicious persons, bhavukaha, you are most auspicious and all others are inauspicious, right? So whatever brings you closer to Krishna, that's auspicious. And whoever doesn't, that's not auspicious, right? Because that's the point. For the soul, coming, awakening their relationship with Krishna, that's the real thing. Anything else is not actually that important or that special. So, yeah? Yes, the jnana yogis and karma yogis cannot claim that position. So the same way as we're getting some taste in Krishna consciousness, and why are we getting some continuous taste? Because there's still some mix of karma and jnana in our activities. So where the karma is or where the jnana is, that attachment, that's the part where we're not getting the taste. And where we don't have that attachment, that's where we're getting the taste. So if we're thinking, oh, but I'm getting no taste, you know, there's no meat, then look at, okay, well, what activities do? What are the direct activities? Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the association of devotees, chanting, serving the deities, living in the Dham, these are the, you know, direct activities and all other subsidiary. Do those and you can get. But if we do those with a motive that I want to get, I do this service and I'll get recognized, and this, that's the part that's going to make the problem. But doing the service is not going to make the problem. It's the part where you think, I'm doing this for myself. Or it can be for Krishna and myself, but that's the thing, that's the point of the, you know, the karma, Misra Bhakti or Jnana Misra Bhakti. It's the part that's mixed can't, because the karmis and yogis can't understand. So if we're having any shortcomings, it's just because of those mixes. We continue the process in the association of devotees and it will come. We get purified and then we don't have that problem anymore. It gets less and less until it goes away. Right? So that's just what you know. So that's the point. It's inspiring because, as we said before, it's pointing out, you do this, you get this benefit. You don't do this, then, you know, it won't, it'll have, the results won't be exactly what you're looking for. So therefore, give up those things that don't work and do those things that work. And it takes time. That's why there's sadhana is regulated, that every day you do a certain amount and this and that. And you try not to go below that. You make that steady. When you can, you do more, you know, on days when you have time or festivals or like that. And gradually, then you start to, the heart gets purified, you start to get a taste, and these other things aren't as important anymore. So it's just, it just naturally comes if you keep at it. That was the point before of, what was the word that it's, muhur, continuously. So if you continuously are, how much you are continuously doing, that's how much continuously you'll get the taste and all that. And then once you get the taste, then you want to do it more. Like in the beginning, we don't have the taste. We do it by intelligence. That's called buddhi yoga. I know this is good. That's why I'm doing it. Right? And so because of that and making the endeavor, we're getting some taste, but it's not all the time. But then if we keep at that buddhi yoga and continuously do that, at some point it becomes more prominent, the taste, than the intelligence aspect. And so then now you want to do because it's very nice. And once that happens, then it more quickly goes. So it's just, yeah. Starting with Brahmavid Apnoti Param. The Taittiriya Upanishad describes the creation of the Anamaya Purusha. After listing elements, starting with Akasha, coming from Brahman, different forms internal to the previous ones are then successively described. The Anamaya Purusha, Pranamaya Purusha, Manomaya Purusha, Vijnanamaya Purusha, and finally the Anandamaya Purusha, which is considered to be Brahman. Brahma Sutra 1.1.13 describes this Anandamayo Bhyasat from the repetition of the words. Anandamaya refers to the Supreme Lord, but it also says Ananda Atma Brahma Pucham Pratishta. Impersonal Brahman is only the tail of that Anandamaya Purusha. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.5. Yeah, okay, that's the Ananda Valu. Okay. The Lord is the basis of that Brahman. After that, the Upanishad says, Raso Vai Saha, Rasam Ye Vayam Labdha. Labdhanandhi bhavati. The Lord is rasa. Realizing the Lord, one attains bliss. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7. But does saha refer to the Anandamaya Purusha, the Lord, under discussion, or to the Brahmapucham, impersonal Brahman? This doubt cannot be considered, for after discussion of the different Purushas, to have saha referred to the Brahmapucha would break the structure of the progression expressed in the text, right? So they started off with Brahma Pucham. You have to inquire, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now they take you up through Anamoy, Pranamoy like this, and they take you up higher and higher levels. And so then you can't say, oh, that means that one at the beginning. No, that's saying you should inquire about the Supreme. And then you go through and see these higher levels. So you're starting the Brahman, Paramahansa, Bhagavan. So when you get to Bhagavan, you can't say, having explained that, oh, it means Brahman, right? So that's what he's talking about here, because the impersonalists will try to take it back to there, because they can't, in other words, they don't have the capacity, because they're trying to approach the absolute simply through jnana, through their intelligence. That's why they always keep bringing up this point of limited intelligence, because it doesn't matter how smart they are, it's still limited. How much intelligence can you stuff into 1/10,000th the tip of the hair? Right? And 1/10,000th, then, what do you call it? Then is divided into three. There's Sat, there's Chit, and Ananda, right? So Chit, that part there, so one like that, you know, so that much you can stick. So 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. And so then a third of that, we won 30,000th the tip of the hair, right? No. Yeah, 1/10,000, 1/30,000. So 1/30,000th, the tip of the hair, is how much intelligence you can stuff into the jiva. So one shouldn't get too proud. But because we are the jiva, that 1/3 is enough, right? That's not bad. 1/3 brains, right? 1/3 intelligence, that's not bad. 1/3 eternity, 1/3 brains, and 1/3 taste, you know? So, you know, it covers all the important points. So it's not bad. What we have to remember is that we are not the absolute. So that's the point, is that why we, you know, these come up, is because there are those who are trying to say the absolute. We are the absolute. No, we are part and parcel of the absolute. But the absolute is still the absolute. Even he expands. That's the whole point of is your Upanishad, and that's the first Upanishad. In other words, you study the Veda. And so then of that, you're going to have the Rig Veda, and I think in the last section of the Rig, is it? No, it's not in the Rig. I think it's in the Yajur. I think the last chapter of the, I don't remember. But it's the last chapter in what, in either the Rig or the Atharva, I mean Yajur Veda, that the Ishupanishad is there. Because otherwise all the Sama? Oh, maybe. Okay, so Sama then. So the last part, because all the other Upanishads are all in the Upanishadic section. They're not in the Samhita, the Veda. They're not in the main. They're in what, because it has four parts. So the main one with all the verses, like that, and then you have these others. So that means already you're just studying the Veda, you would have studied that. So that means if it's there, it makes it important. It's the foremost of them. And so if it's established this point, then when you go to the other Upanishads, you should be studying it with that mood, right? So you're trying to remove the glaring effulgence, to see the person and all these different things. And in there it's saying, you know, basically one plus one is one, one minus one is one. Is that Krishna, he is everything and he's one. And even the jivas and his energies expand, he's still the same one person because they're just part of him. It's not like it goes out of him. It's still, even whatever expands is still him. And he's still the person that expands. It's not that when it goes out, then he disappears into everything. The impersonal, his unlimited impersonal expansion is there, and he's still the person that it's expanding from. He expands as Paramatma to control all his energies and everything like that, and he's still the supreme person. So that's the point that they're, you know, that they'll refer to, because they're, you know, Brahma bodies, Maya bodies, and they'll have all kinds of things to say. The Lord, of course, is well known to be rasa, since he is filled with bliss, right? Because if they say he's just sat, but it's well known to be rasa. So that's bliss. That's the ananda. They even talk about Brahmananda, but there's only Brahman and there's only sat, eternity. So it doesn't make sense. So you can see that there's something wrong with their understanding. But unfortunately, you know, they're bewildered, because the point is, to be able to understand the Lord as Sat, Chit, and Ananda, that's only the devotees can do that. That's why Bhagavatam is for them. It's not for the impersonalists or others like that. The Lord is superior to the Brahman, being its support. In other words, Brahman is the support of everything, but that Brahman is resting on Krishna. He's the support of Brahman. He's the source of the Brahman. So the point is everything exists because it's Brahman, and Krishna is that Brahman. So that impersonalist is resting on him. Right? Gita says, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. I am the basis of the Brahman. Bhagavad Gita 14:27. This statement as well shows that Krishna is superior to the Brahman. Then, quote from Bhagavatam, the various groups of people in the arena regarded Krishna in different ways. When he entered it with his elder brother, the wrestlers saw Krishna as a lightning bolt, the men of Mathura as the best of males, the women as Cupid in person, the cowherd men as their relative, the impious rulers as the chastiser, his parents as their child, the king of the Bojas as death, the unintelligent as the Supreme Lord's universal form, the yogis as the absolute truth, and the Vrishnis as their supreme worshipable deity. Right? Because the Vrishni would see him as the super soul. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:43-17. That's very far out. The unintelligent as the Supreme Lord's universal form. And generally it's those who are, you know, intellectually inclined, they can get into and analyze the universal form and all that. But if that's all you think there is, and that's what you think he is, no, here's the person. So that's why they're unintelligent. They've seen this and the greatness and how it works, and then they don't understand it comes from the person. It's the person that does that expands. So just as the laws governing and him as super soul and the universal form, that still he's the basis of that. You know, he's the basis of those aspects. So yeah. Sridhar Swami explains that this verse illustrates that Krishna, Bhagavan, is the form of all rasas combined, starting with Madhura Ras, because the verse describes that different types of persons realize different rasas of Krishna just on seeing him. In other words, Krishna is the form of all rasas, right? So he's pointing out that in this verse, that all these different people saw him, and they all are seeing him in context of different rasas, right? You know, some of them are, you know, direct rasas, some are indirect, some are you know, how you say, is these other features, you know, it can seemingly like death is negative and these and this. But the point is this, it's all based on him. So he is the combined form of all rasa. Thus, both Gita and Bhagavatam proclaim Krishna to be rasa. Right? And we saw before, he was quoting from Taittiriya Upanishad, raso vai saha, means he is rasa. So that point is the point. That rasa means, no, don't doesn't mean Brahman. No, he is. Because even they start to say, no, it's Brahman. But then Brahman, you say, it's just Sat. So then Sat Chit Ananda, so it has three features to it, you know. So then you say, it's, you know, so whatever. The jiva attaining the Lord, who is rasa, attains the highest level of bliss. For after this, the discussion of bliss is concluded with the words, Anandasya Mimamsa, Mimamsa Bhavati. This concludes the examination of bliss. Taittiriya Upanishad 8.2. I think it's supposed to be 2.8. Yeah, because here put 8.2. Because before it was 2.5 and 2.7. I think what they're talking about is the second one and then the in that verse. And this is 2.8. And it may also be those are sections, because the means Taittiriya Upanishad has four parts. It has Sikshavali, Anandavali, Riguvali, and Mahanarayan Upanishad, or Narayanavali, like that. And so that'll be 1, 2, 3, 4. Then within it, they have different points that they're making. So there's different sections. So it doesn't have as such things, but it's, you know, to be the different points made. So that would be the second number that's used. And then the third one would be the particular verse, right? So depending on who's categorizing, because it doesn't have the specific thing. So some will take it and break it down like that and make it this. Some will just say, oh, it's this is two and this number of verse. So either, you know, saying like this is concluding that the eighth verse is there, or it means that eighth section, right? Because it talks, in the Nandavali, it talks about all kinds of ways of looking at the rasa, but at one point, then it gets into exactly what the Acharya is pointing out here. Or the meaning can be that other forms of the Lord, on seeing Krishna, become filled with bliss, right? This is evident in the following verses, right? In other words, the other forms, expansions from Krishna, when they see Krishna, then they, you know, I mean, in Vrindavan, then they develop that attraction for him. So all of Krishna's expansions are all his devotees, right? Whether it's Vishnu Tattva or, you know, definitely a Shakti Tattva, they're all devotees of Krishna, because Krishna is the most attractive. That's why that name is considered the foremost name, because he's all attractive. It's the one thing, because why is he attractive? Because he has all these opulences, you know, like that. And so therefore he has all of them. And that, you know, it's something that all can relate to. Anybody who's dealing with the absolute truth, with the person, with Godhead, then can appreciate that aspect of it, right? So from Bhagavatam, Lord Mahavishnu said, I brought the Brahmana's sons here because I wanted to see the two of you. My expansions, who have descended to the earth to save the principles of religion. As soon as you finish killing the demons who burn the earth, quickly come back here to me. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.89.58. Right? Because even he's attracted like that. So he's saying my expansion is because you have the thing is that he's taking care of that. So in this way, you could say is they're doing that work of him, but he's doing the work of Sankarshan, who's doing the work of Mahanarayan, who's doing the work of the primary, Mahasankarshan, and who's doing the work of Balaram, who's doing the work of Krishna. You know, so like that. Then the next one. Krishna possesses that form suitable for human pastimes to show the full capacity of his yoga maya. Right? Because other forms, they only show part of, you know, like this. That form astonishes even the Lord of Vaikuntha. It is the pinnacle of auspicious qualities and enhances the beauty of his ornaments. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.12. Right? Like that. So Krishna is attracted by Krishna. Like that. In any case, Krishna is rasa, the fruit. But this fruit is not directly situated on the tree of the Vedas. It has fallen down Galitam nearby. This object, rasa, is not on the tree itself. It is not to be searched out in the Vedas. Ooh, this is good. But rather it is found in the mouth of Sukadeva. So in other words, because it is perfectly ripened, it has come from the tree and come down through the parampara. It's not on the tree. So it's come from the tree, but it's not on the tree. So that means by studying the Vedas, you won't see it. So it's by studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Then studying Srimad Bhagavatam, now you can look back at the Vedas and see all these discussions. Like the Acharya is like here. He's discussing Taittiriya Upanishad here. All the Acharya, they talk to me from other Upanishads, from the Vedanta Sutra. They can talk about from, you know, directly from the Vedas, Samhitas themselves. You know, like this, they can pull verses from all over the place to show these points that Bhagavatam's making. But in the context of that scripture that they're quoting from, you wouldn't see that. From there, Raso Vai Saha, you're just talking about Ananda and the Bali like this. You wouldn't catch that means Krishna and Braja. Knowing Bhagavatam, now you know that's what they're talking about. So that's the thing, it's hidden there. Right? Because for, let's say you have the Lord, and the Lord is breathing, you know, Mahavishnu is breathing, and from his breath is coming the Vedas, like that. So it's that, and he's a devotee of Krishna. So Krishna is going to be part of that, but at the same time, as it will have more that flavor of the Lord and how he's controlling everything, the Purusha, so Purusha Shukta, and like this. But in there is these points that are there. So that's the Bhagavatam brings that out. Right? So it's found in the mouth of Sukadeva. So when Sukadeva speaks, then you understand it, hear it. No, he's heard it from Vyas, right? Who's heard it from Narada, who's heard it from Brahma, who's heard it from like that. One can say that Vyas, knowing that this fruit was very tasty, took it and put it in the mouth of his son out of affection. Sukamukat can also indicate a cause. The rasa is sweeter because of coming from the mouth, Sukadeva. So you can say, because it's sweet, he you know, because he's a son, he gave that to put that, you know, like the parent will take something very nice and tasty and put it in the mouth of the child because they know it's sweet. But it can also mean that coming from the mouth of Sukadeva, then it becomes even sweeter. So that's the point. You know, he received it from Vyasadeva in its, you know, as a sweet, and then it becomes more sweet. So, yeah. This sweetness of rasa is shown in Sukadeva's statements such as the following. Because the devotees accept me as their friend, their relative, their son, preceptor, benefactor, and supreme deity, they cannot be deprived of their possessions at any time. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25.38. So you can see here is that friend, relative, son, preceptor, benefactor, supreme deity, whatever is the rasa, however you're relating, it's all, if they're absorbed in Krishna, then how can you be derived of their possessions? Because their possession is Krishna. Krishna is in the heart. That's the point. Bhagavatam can give Krishna's in the heart, and that's what's valuable. and nothing else is has that importance. Other things have their importance and how they can be used in Krishna's service. But other than that, then not really much importance. Bhuvi then indicates Vrajabhumi. Bhavukaha and Rasikaha indicate the dear gopis. Oh, dear relishers of Krishna's rasa, drink the sweetness of the rasa arising from his form, Bhagavatam. Or Pibita Bhagavatam Rasamalayam can mean relish rasa up to the point of embracing Alayam, Krishna. Right? So, you know, you want to get into the point is we see here, as we discussed before, about this difference between as it is and the so-called literal translation. Because literal means no, but in the dictionary it means this. But we always have to remember the dictionary is simply documenting what the words are being said can mean. Right? In Sanskrit, there's more of a direct connection. In English, then it's just that happens to be there. Maybe you can take it back something, but you know it doesn't necessarily. Sometimes the words how they use have no meaning with the root that they're from. Right. So this point here, but you can see here is they can take those words and show, going back to the roots, all the different ways it can mean, because they mean it. So in this context, then it can have all these root meanings because of the word has roots, and that roots, the root itself doesn't have one meaning. There's many meanings. This has synonyms of that. So taking those, then it shows all the different ways it connects to Krishna. So this is as it is. This is actually literal, going from using the grammar and all these things like that. And the other things, that's what we say again? Use of one's limited intelligence. Yes. Okay. Krishna's rasa is in these, so whatever it is, it has all those things in it, but you can see is how much is there and what you have to get to. And then it brings it to the gopis, you know, and then the sahajas say, oh yeah, no, we only take that part. That's the only meaning of everything else. Is, oh, it's not up to our standard. But so, you know, you're not up to that standard. That's the point. Cause if you were up to the standard, you'd preach in anything. Things that you're saying, you know, you wouldn't understand that. The acharyas do because they taste it. They could see it. You can only win an obvious, oh, okay, yes, this means that, you know. Yeah. And if they say, oh, but no, Vishwanath said this, and so then take all the other things that Vishwanath said. Why are you only taking this? You know? Krishna's rasa is indestructible, amrita, and flows away quickly from the mind and eye, drava. Therefore, drink that indestructible nectar in the form of his lips. In that case, Nigava Kalpa Taror Galitam Phalam means Raghunuga Bhakti, which is the fully ripened fruit, Galitam, on the tree of the Vedas. Right? But we have to get there. So you can't just say, you know, it's just like you start up a business, and yes, you want to become very wealthy, but you can't say in the first day, yeah, I'm a billionaire now, you know. Like that. No, it's just you keep doing that and it will grow. So that's the point. So it's not like the mundane that does it, because developing love for Krishna, having prema, is the inherent nature of the jiva. So it's the one thing you can do. The what goes on in this world, and you go and how much effect you can get, that's based on what's the nature of the particular form you have from your previous actions. But this, that's something that anybody in any position can gain, right? Good? Yes? No? Okay. This fully ripened fruit is the Raghunuga Bhakti following after the sentiments of the gopis. Following after, not being the gopis. Mm-hmm. You're following after their sentiments, which is the highest type of love. Right? So the point is that you get there by following their footsteps. If you think that I'm going to do that by imitating, no, that won't work. Right? If I go out, I buy myself a big chain like that, get myself a baseball hat, you know, and stand around like this, it doesn't make me actually a good musician. Right? You know, so yeah, no, you can imitate all you want, but it doesn't mean that that is that you have to actually do. And then you do, then that's, but it's the nature of the soul that everybody can get there. Okay. So we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bo Gaur, Hari Bo Gaur.